Now, it may well just have been an observation of the wonderful work of Barry there, but I got a feeling that he'd actually forgotten what the new word of the year had been. I got a feeling there was a pause there with the fake news moment. I mean, it just is one of those kind of things. It's all right, we can offer a refresher course if you wish. For that, to all wonderful things there. And indeed, gender fluid, which sounds just wrong in so many ways. Maybe fluidity of genders, perhaps, but gender fluid, I don't know, Gabrielle, are you going to use that in a story for the Gibraltar Chronicle today?
Not today.
No, I don't know, exactly.
In the future, I can't tell, but... Don't have that on the
cards
today.
Yeah. And as far as fake news is concerned, well, that just doesn't, that's not even on the agenda as far as the Gibraltar Chronicle is actually concerned. It's all true, it's all viable, and it's all wonderful, particularly if it's got the Peralta byline. But enough of such general badinage and such like. The folk needs to know, or at least our listener does, what is the weather for Lincoln from Gibraltar?
Okay, so Lincoln's weather is highs of 11 degrees centigrade, lows of 6 degrees centigrade. After a cold and cloudy start, it will be turning brighter throughout the day.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And if, of course, you were listening before the news, you would have heard the shocking revelation that Frodo is not with Gabriella this morning.
Without him. I went to a show last night, to see a mentalist, so I thought instead of having him alone at my house all evening, I took him to my parents' house. So he's having a sleepover at the grandparents'.
Well, I mean, that is just extraordinary, and I'm sure it would have been bonkers to actually see the mentalist.
It was so much fun. He predicted the Gibraltar Chronicle headline 3 days in advance. So he sent us a letter 3 days before Monday.
Yes.
And we had it sealed. We all signed it across the envelope.
Yes.
And I kept it for the past few days. And then I called up on stage. He had a copy of the Chronicle with obviously yesterday's front page. And then he opened up the letter and he had predicted the headline.
Do you know, that was
two of the headlines he had predicted.
That was done by David Fox, who must come back to do a midweek drive for too long, based in Nottingham. He did a similar thing with Katie Dorr and a couple of other midweek drive outs with the whole system. Clearly, they have powers beyond mortal ken. But never mind. Is this part of the Magic Festival that we've spoken about?
No, it's not. This was actually just a charity event this man does by himself. He just every I think few months he does a show and he raises, and all the money goes to charity. So it's completely separate from the magic show, because I guess mentalism and magic are slightly removed.
Well, they do say that all magic is slightly mental. No, best not go there. It's a different thing. But okay, another little plug for our mentalist. Let's give him the shameless joy of having his name checked once again on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. He was...
Levia Diaz.
Available for international accommodations. I mean, for instance, if the White House wanted him to actually sort of make a quick Christmas party or a Thanksgiving routine, would he be able to fly over the Atlantic?
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure he got him to.
Good. It's definitely a thought there. So, Frodo, well, we trust he's okay. I'm sure he'll be fine with the grandparents. Do you get a sense that he knows, or does he feel as though somehow you're abandoning him?
No, he didn't even want to say bye to me when I left him. Because I leave him every day when I go to work, so he's got company at all times.
Yes.
With my parents who are retired.
Yeah.
And after work I went to say hi to him, and I said, okay, bye Frodo, I'm going, I'm not taking you with me this time. And he didn't even say bye to me.
Unbelievable.
He went back to the sofa and completely ignored me and said, okay, goodbye, I'm fine here, they give me more treats anyway.
What F's? Clearly, this is
I'm the one who imposes a diet, so he doesn't get overweight. But my parents are a lot more soft with him.
You see, last night we were talking about the excitement of Bean, who is a Dachshund, who is based with on broadcast. But I feel, and I didn't want to mention it to Rachel at the time, that actually Frodo's probably got more attitude than Bean, although probably a lot less grateful from what you've actually just described, really.
Yeah, Frodo is a prince.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Okay. Gabriella, one of the things you need to do now is to formally facilitate the handing over of the 2018 Midweek Drivet calendar, a copy thereupon, one of the early copies that actually ruined, and ruined even, which, once again, Gabriella's missing your good self. We really need to either do a photo shoot in Gibraltar or get some sort of ways forward, because it's ridiculous. But we say good morning to Shaylee McKenzie. How are you, Shaylee?
I'm great, Alex. How are you?
Very
hi,
well.
Gabriella.
Gabriella, are you
hi.
Ready? Are you ready to actually tell me when to hand the Midweek Drive 2018 Adventures in Radio, Adventures in Audio even, calendar to Shaylee McKenzie? I'm waiting for your words, Gabriella. Would you like to actually say when we want to do it? Otherwise, we could be here for quite some time.
Right now, isn't it?
Right now. There we are, right now. The thing has actually gone through there, and she can peruse the fact that she's seen in a number of interesting months in the upcoming Midweek Drive 2018 scenario. One day I'll actually post one even to Gibraltar.
I feel honoured.
There we are. We'll get her to describe the whole excitement as the programme proceeds, because we've got a lot of content to fill. Meanwhile, Shaylee, having handed in the keys, would you like to actually pass on those last two messages to Gabriella, who has just revealed that Frodo has not been with us today because he's with the grandparents, because she was seeing a mentalist, and it's just a long story which you'll have to catch.
Wow, yeah, that sounds interesting. I'll have to re-listen to that. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Gabriella?
By the way, that's us, by the way, dear listener.
It's really loud, isn't it?
Very loud.
Bit of heavy metal coming
it's
through.
It's quite early as well over there at 8 a.m. to be doing that.
Listen, Gabriella, it's a way we have to wake the students up these days.
So much
consideration.
Yeah, otherwise they don't get up.
They
exactly.
do. We've got to press that nuclear button to make those 9 o'clock seminars, so it's very important. Yeah, bring out the whole routines.
To waking up the students
exactly.
for their seminars.
Yeah,
precisely.
Make sure they're on time.
So the next one is...
Will you be joining us again next Thursday?
Yes, I will, thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah. Here's Richard Burton and Julie Andrews. Well, who will be Richard Burton and Julie Andrews taking us around to Richard Fitzwilliams.
It's true. It's true. The Crown has made it clear. The climate must be perfect all the year. A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot, and there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September in Camelot. Camelot, Camelot, I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8, the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot. Camelot, I know it gives a person pause, but in Camelot, Camelot, those are the legal laws. The snow may never slush upon the hillside. By 9 p.m. the moonlight must appear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot.
Yay. Yes, that's what politics is all about, as indeed the movie Jackie actually demonstrated. Richard Fitzwilliams, good morning. Had you ever encountered Richard Burton singing as opposed to Richard Harris, who we'll be hearing from later, the wonderful Camelot line?
It's interesting that you played that, because it was played not once, I think, but twice in the extremely successful, I thought, Natalie Portman's Jackie in the White House as she wanders around the rooms. I mean, this was, of course, it's actually part and parcel of my lecture on monarchy on screen, the way that cinema has traced the kings and queens of England. This, of course, was the mythical court of King Arthur and the various takes on it. Remember that Richard Burton was taken out of Camelot for Cleopatra.
Which was, look what happened exactly. For folk who are interested in Arthurian legends, something we'll be speaking about with Renee Ward in a matter of 15 or so minutes from now. She's hosting a number of screenings coming, first of all, on Tuesday the 7th of November, Knights of the Round Table, the 1953 classic, with Richard Thorpe in the director's chair, Robert Taylor, Ava Gardner and Mel Ferrer.
Taylor was totally unable to act, I have to say. I would say Lancelot and Guinevere with Brian Ahern, Lancelot Dulac, French take on the legend, and above all, Excalibur, John Borman's extraordinary film with Nicola Williamson as Merlin. I mean, that was full of visions.
Richard, I can only agree. And then when I look at the other upcoming films that are coming in this series at the Cargill Lecture Theatre, we have Anton Fuqua's King Arthur 2004, and then the Pièce de Résistance.
That was disastrous.
Yes, yes, exactly. And the Pièce de Résistance, Renee, I hope you're listening, because the Pièce de Résistance, 5th of December 2017, Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Oh, don't even mention it. I think it's too early in the morning for even the thought of...
Renee, what are you thinking?
Cornucopia of Piffle.
Anyway, we'll get a chance to do a little bit of Cornucopia of Piffle. I think I'll write that one down.
I like that, yeah.
Well, on the plus side, of course, Richard, you have just returned from Florence, nothing to do with the Magic Roundabout, or indeed Zebedee, but the wonderful part of the world which demonstrates, I mean, just some of these artistic scenarios that are just... Isn't that wonderful, Shaley? Oh, you know, you have to sort of ease your way around to see some of the joys of the Florentine images that are actually there. But I mean, just quite frankly, it's amazing. Richard, how can you say modern art juxtaposed with the classic Florentine images there?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I absolutely adore Florence, and of course, I had a wonderful time with from the chapel of the Medici Riccardi and the wonderful mosaics and friezes in it to the Casa Buonarroti, which was absolutely fascinating. The house of Michelangelo's family includes Battle of the Centaurs, one of his early works, to the Palazzo Vecchio, Michelangelo's glorious courtyard, and the Vasari friezes, which glorified the Medici's. To, of course, the Uffizi and the Palazzo Pitti, the Palazzo Strozzi. There's so much to see, of course, and I could have gone on, and indeed did, including an interesting visit to a library designed by Michelangelo at the Church of San Lorenzo, which also houses the Medici tombs. But message to those responsible for this, it is very often putting. My hotel was between the Duomo and the Baptistery on the one hand, and the Palazzo della Signoria on the other. As I entered it, I was about to look at the replica of the David and various other statues and the statue of Cosimo de' Medici, and what did I see? A gigantic blob, which I can only describe as so terrifying that I changed my schedule and went into the Palazzo Vecchio a bit later when I had absorbed the fact. They really, temporarily, obviously, made idiots of themselves, just as at the Pitti Palace they had a giant and rather strange iron sculpture in the gardens. And
Richard, you should come up to the Siren Studio and you should see pretty much an interesting installation occurring at this very moment in time. In fact, if we're really lucky, we might indeed have some sort of metallic noises coming across from our construction.
There was enough that was metallic. Metallic in the Boboli Gardens, which is a thing of beauty, and I didn't want to be distracted. I have to say the Palazzo Pitti is a bit difficult in any case, because my last visit there years ago, they had the Arnaldo's Lady in the Mink, with the Mink, and that's a wonderful work, and that's especially on show, but it's rather like going into the Borghese Palace in Rome. Every single bit of every single room is so ornate that when you come out of it, you can't remember a thing, which is a difficulty, but it was worth seeing. You don't want to be distracted, and the worst of all, the Palazzo Strozzi.
Another giant blob?
Yes, a sort of spaceship-like object. Now, you could argue Leonardo da Vinci perhaps invented its predecessor, but all the artists who put these things up, you know, you could say I put a blob in the Piazza della Signoria, because the reason it's so giant is that I was so awed by the masterpieces around me, I had to make something that was appropriate to the scene. You know the way they write all this nonsense. But frankly, it really was extraordinary to see in several top sites, and I went to, I think, pretty well every single one of them. Three of them had these ridiculous examples of that which is contemporary, and there's so much that is of our era, which, you know, surely is better than this. Well, it's just silliness, really. But apart from that, yes, absolutely glorious. If you can wander around Florence and the Ponte Vecchio, and also the Masacci, the famous Carmine Chapel with the Brancacci murals of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and I thought it was very hard to see them. They didn't have a way that you could light them, but I was absolutely fascinated by the insights you get into the Renaissance and the scale of the beauty of it by being able, say, to go twice to the Uffizi. If you're able to do that, go at 5 o'clock in the evening so that the masses of tourists, there'll be masses there, but yes. The giant...
We call them the common folk, Richard. We try not to, you know.
Interesting, mentioning the tourists and the discerning and the non-discerning. I noticed that when there were tourists, and that was the Medici chapels in the San Lorenzo Church or the Uffizi, where you'd expect, or the Palazzo Vecchio, there were masses of them. But where there were none, or where there were really so few, you know, two or three people, like the Medici Riccardi Palace, which actually is very, very close to the Duomo, so tourists could go there, they just didn't. Or the Horn Gallery was quite interesting.
But Richard, some people might like that silver monstrosity. I mean, for instance, Dr. Chris Dowes, you know, could it not be like something out of Star Trek Discovery that's just emerged to take over the wonderful world of Florence?
Yeah, it could indeed. I've always rather fancied going to Florence. It looks rather nice.
Putting it mildly, I would suggest that the sobriquet nice perhaps could be a little inadequate. The whole thing is simply glorious. I mean, I think it was Truman Capote who described Venice as a box of chocolate liqueurs that you ate in one go. I mean, it really is fabulous, because when you wander around the Uffizi, I mean, their sculpture galleries, it's vast. It's also extraordinary, the Botticelli works, Bertha Venus and the Rites of Spring, there. And also I was very interested, one of my favourite paintings in the National Gallery is the Battle of San Romano, and it's a triptych. Part of it's in the Louvre, and part of it is in the Uffizi. And it's interesting that Lorenzo the Magnificent, one of the top figures in the Medici dynasty, which ruled Florence for some 200 plus years, apparently seized it. And as a battle painting, I hadn't noticed this, but it was the BBC documentary pointed out that it has no sky. And the reason probably was Lorenzo cut the sky out to make it fit the niche in his palace where he wanted to display it. But that is also a joy. I mean, there's so many works, including, this is remarkable, the largest painting, in fact, was never finished by Leonardo da Vinci. And there's a special exhibition at the Uffizi of how it was restored. And this is just amazing. Filippino Lippi painted the actual work because Leonardo didn't finish it, but It's quite extraordinary how they are able to restore paintings these days. And the Strozzi Palace, which I have to say I didn't know, had a remarkable exhibit, if you got past the balloon in the courtyard, of 16th century art. In fact, there's so
Richard, let the balloon lie. We're currently looking at your Facebook update in which the lines, "I'm fascinated by the Battle of San Romano triptych, one part is in the National Gallery," of course. It's time we did another location report there with your good self. One part in the Louvre, as you actually said, and part in the Uffizi. But Chris, you have a triptych story, I believe.
Yeah, I do. For my PhD, which was an analysis of the positioning of writing comic books within the textual matrix,
i.e. sequential storytelling.
Exactly, sequential storytelling. And of course, triptych is one of the earliest examples of a narrative. I mean, you can kind of put them somewhere between Tales of Genji, the original kind of Japanese storytelling on the Silk Scrolls, and then kind of look at Hogarth a few hundred years later on as kind of sequential storytelling. It's perfect stuff.
So, Richard, frankly, without the triptych, no Stan Lee, no Jack Kirby, probably no Thor, Ragnarok.
There you go.
Well, I have to say that we may well get to Thor, Ragnarok, and also Murder on the Orient Express next week.
You see, teasing ahead there. Natasha Armstrong will be very keen to find out what happens with her. But I take it you'd give it thumbs up to Florence, apart from the contemporary art installations, which...
Oh, it really is a city of glories. But this is on a scale that's so grand. Of course, the Medici's, I mean, this is one of the interesting aspects of it. You look at all the friezes and so many of the battle paintings and the way Florence was established as such an important state under the Medici's. So much of it glorifies them.
Well, let's face it, they knew how to poison people. They weren't worried about people putting their hands on their knees. They were sorted
absolutely
out.
Yeah. Exactly. All of that nonsense. Yeah. I loved it.
They were expelled during their rule twice. And I'm perhaps, Alex, you would prefer Savonarola, the famous, or should I say infamous, priest who preached Puritanism. How about that?
Why do you say that? Just because I was quoting Torquemada on last night's show?
Torquemada.
And not the 2000 AD character, just in case you're
wondering. Oh, very good, Alex. There we go. Yeah.
Keeping the connections live and thriving. Well, Richard, we need to move on to Renee Ward. Renee, who, as I said, is going to, in some way, promote the three movies that she is archiving. I mean, next term, of course, Chris and myself will be doing a science fiction series.
We will.
Very good. If I said, Chris, that so far, and this is something which probably will amuse the Grimsby soul who like the weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, our Grimsby listener. she is listening right now. I've just had a text saying that she's listening. There you are.
Would you like to give a name check or is it just an anonymous?
It's Sarah and she's listening. Splendid. So there we are.
It's brilliant. Oh, yeah, exactly. hello from Shady. Anyway, the words that Richard used were cornucopia of piffle.
Okay.
Knights of the Round Table, Robert Taylor.
It's not one of the best.
I mean, you remember him in Ivanhoe. Admittedly, I saw it when I was around five, but the facts were a wonderful film, but...
Robert Taylor.
And a castle I loved in those days. Robert Taylor never could act. Good heavens, you remember Bovardis when he attempted to act? Peter Ustinov acted him off the stage, and if you watch any of it now, you'll cringe with embarrassment. I never saw Knights of the Round Table, I have to say.
Yes, on the 21st November, Anton Fuqua's King Arthur.
Oh, absolute disaster. I mean, completely forget it. Keira Knightley, incidentally, is a joke in that film, not to mention the fact that the villains looked like creatures wandering round in sacks, which is probably what the extras put on. I mean, oh dear, Fuqua just had no idea what he was doing, and it had nothing to do with King Arthur set in the Roman period, but that doesn't matter if it was entertaining. It wasn't Clive Owen, as I remember. Oh, awful.
And concluding this little triptych in her own way.
Very good.
It's all right, she has a right to reply in a few moments. Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the
Sword. No, but I mean, you don't put that anywhere. You
thank heavens. Camelot, I mean, the reverse, of course. Camelot, the musical version, you'd say that passes muster with yourself.
Well, I said on the Broadway stage, it's infuriatingly hummable, and they played it twice in Jackie. What I didn't comment on was Richard Harris, Vanessa Redgrave, Franco Nero. I think Vanessa Redgrave and Franco Nero had much more fun off-screen than we had on-screen watching them, and Richard Harris was not well cast in that role. An actor, but this was... a silly thing, and it in fact, most people thought, especially Lerner Low, remember, after My Fair Lady could have produced something better than Camelot, as a musical was a flop, and Burton, yes, and Julie Andrews, on Broadway, but that's different. This was, I mean, good heavens, if you're going to have King Arthur, why is John Borman's Excalibur not there?
I am in total agreement with you there. Oh, my goodness me. One of the greatest films ever.
John Borman's
Excalibur. Lancelot du Lac, a subversive take on the Arthurian legend. You might even go to the 1950s at Brian Ahern as King Arthur in Lancelot and Guinevere, which was a good bit of fun. Three appalling choices, and as for giving the nightmare of Guy Ritchie. Good heavens, it's only just been released. Why prolong the agony?
Shanley, would you like to put those last two questions to Richard?
I haven't reviewed the film. I mean, this is unprecedented.
Richard,
I protest.
Can we come back to you in the second part of the programme, say, half nine?
The killing of a sacred deer and the Mayorovich stories to serve.
I think he's going to have a lie down.
Exactly. Shaley, last two questions for this half of the programme, at least, for Richard Fitzwilliams, please.
So, Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Well, I was until I was truncated, sent before the spirit breathing into this breathing world, scarce half made up, and that's so lame and unfashionable that the dogs bark at me as I pass by them.
Indeed.
And will you be back at half nine?
Well, yes, what time can I return
to
my review?
Hopefully we'll be looking at half nine.
Oh, it's half nine, most certainly, yes, absolutely.
We look forward to it.
I mean, King Arthur, who on earth would put King Arthur, which has just been released and was an absolute catastrophe, into one of who would re-show it?
Richard, we'll find out from Renee in a matter of moments from now.
You swore that you had taught me everything from A to Z, with nearly an omission in between. Well, I will tell you what. You obviously forgot. That's how a ruler rules a queen. And what of teaching me by turning me to animal and bird, from beaver to the smallest bobolink? I should have had a whirl at changing to a girl to learn the way the creatures think. But wasn't there a night on a summer long gone by? We passed a couple wrangling away. And did I not say, Merlin, what if that chap were I? And did he not give counsel and say, what was it now? My mind's a war. Oh, yes. By Jove, now I recall. How to handle a woman. There's a way, said the wise old man. A way known by every woman since the whole rigmarole began. Do I flatter her? I begged him answer. Do I threaten or cajole or plead? Do I brood or play the gay romancer? Said he, smiling. No, indeed. How to handle a woman? Mark me well, I will tell you, sir. The way to handle a woman is to love her, simply love her, merely love her, love her, understand you.
Merlin told me once, never be too disturbed if you don't understand what a woman is thinking. They don't do it very often.
Yes, I think we just have to hold it there because clearly the views of some of our singers and contributors on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition can't be sort of... Because Renee, you do a lot of thinking in your time. Renee Ward, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Alex?
Excellent. Delighted to touch base with your good self. And indeed, even the construction workers are sort of showing their joy by hammering.
Oh, wonderful. When will that thing be done?
How long is a piece of string? Where do flies go in winter?
The words of Chris Dowes. Welcome addition to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. And, of course, Shady McKenzie. Shady, did you encounter Renee in your time as an undergraduate reading English?
I believe once or twice. She knows my friend Jenny Metcalf.
Oh, Jenny Metcalf, yeah.
Yeah.
There we are. Thumbs up. And certainly the words cornucopia of piffle could never be said about any of the contributors.
Well, it's a genius phrase, but kind of offensive.
We thought we'd trail ahead, Renee, to this little slot about three movies, which I think are worth going to see just because I think you should say you've seen them. Mm. You know, just for that sort of line of things, starting off with Cargill Lecture Theatre, this coming Tuesday, the 7th of November, 5:45 to 7:30 p.m, Knights of the Round Table, in colour, the MGM's first CinemaScope production, Robert Taylor, Ava Gardner, Mel Ferrer, Jose's Connection, of course, there, Sir Ferrer, I suppose, then, of course, Anton Fuqua's King Arthur, and then Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. And I kind of responded by saying, ironically, when you sent me the email about this, was going to be any place for Guy Ritchie's opus, expecting a kind of put down on the basis of, well, it's got David Beckham attempting an accent in there.
Great.
Exactly, which you might sort of think there. Interesting enough, in terms of going to see that, have you seen any of the movies yourself, Renee? And could you talk to us about why this wonderful Lincoln School of English and Journalism, Lincoln School of Film and Media, and the English Student Society are putting on this, as we said, triptych of total, tremendous...
Just stop with the tease.
Yeah, but
okay. Well, part of it has to do with new modules at the university that I'm running. So one of the new modules this year is a module on King Arthur and his court. So part of what I do is look at medieval and medievalism. And the module is team-taught, so Jim Cheshire in History and Heritage is doing some work on the Victorians, and Andy Elliott in Film and Media is doing modern film and adaptations of Arthur. So really, these films arose from our decision to include Andy and what he would teach in one of the later sessions for the module, and then what films he wanted my students to see. So some of the choices were somewhat selected by Andy, but also with an understanding of what are some of the good, almost the good, the bad, and the ugly that we can show of modern medievalism that reinvents the Arthurian myth. So the King Arthur, the Knights of the Round Table, is probably one, as you've mentioned, one of the most monumental films from the 20th century and definitely influenced film adaptations after that. So certainly worth seeing. King Arthur, Anton Fuqua's version, is so bad. so bad and so good in so many ways. It really...
Do you mean to say that even Keira Knightley can't actually raise the movie out of...
Nippy nose.
It does some interesting things historically. It's probably, I think it was the first film adaptation to place the King Arthur legend in the earlier period. I mean, they certainly get their history wrong, and I always love showing the opening clip, which talks about the withdrawal of the Roman Empire somewhere near the end of the 5th century, which is completely inaccurate because, of course, they withdraw in 410. Yeah. And they use the Sumerian...
Renee, alternate realities.
Yes, I know.
Alternate timelines.
And they use the myth of the Roman Empire bringing in people from the Asian plateaus and other regions, which, of course, isn't that far-fetched, but they use that as their base for Arthur. The Guy Ritchie film, which I had not seen until recently, and I was loath to see for a number of reasons, because the trailer, I had two reactions to the trailer. First, yes. I love Guy Ritchie action films, and so my initial thought was, that could be really stunning.
It could be like The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, but then what they did with the story made me want to cry. The first 15 minutes of the film, my poor husband, because I kept thinking, that doesn't make, what are they, who, why, it was just with my reactions.
I sense a real agreement here between Richard Fitzwilliams and Renee, a film critic. I don't think Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, of course, even with David Beckham, has kind of quite... If it helps, Renee, I have yet to actually watch my DVD version of the thing, but I have actually purchased DVD because I just thought I'd support Guy Ritchie's failing career.
You know, put your feet up, grab a nice glass of wine, and be prepared for a bumpy ride.
Right, you'll be lock, stock, and two smoking swords.
Nice.
Yeah.
Shaylee, does this appeal? I mean, as a graduate, I'm sure you'd be welcome to come along to the Cargill Lecture Theatre to check out some of these wonderful things.
So I have actually seen the Guy Ritchie one, and it isn't the best one. I do have to admit, I do apologise, Guy Ritchie. There's not much going on in the film, if I'm honest. But the rest of them I haven't seen, so...
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoy mythical
in many ways
tales.
It sets that level for something that Chris and myself talked about in terms of this collection of science fiction theme movies we'll be introducing next term, really, to actually work through that. So.
Yeah. Can non-students come to that?
I think so.
Yes. You're welcome.
And if any help, next semester we'll be running a set of Robin Hood films as well.
Oh, great.
Errol
Flynn.
Yeah.
Errol Flynn.
No Errol, no Chris. Errol it's as simple as
and,
that.
Well, and presumably we'll have the wonderful Australian Russell Crowe incarnation.
See what I can do. Oh, no. I think the one thing, the three films that were chosen, though, I think the one thing they do demonstrate quite well is how malleable the Arthurian legend is and how many different ways it can make meaning for different people. So if I can lend one positive comment to the kind of the later films that we've been trashing a little, they do certainly provide us with new ways of thinking about things and thinking about how the myth can be reinterpreted.
There's always some good. As we say in our feedback sessions to undergraduates and postgraduates, there's always some good in the process.
And of course, you can't say it's rubbish. You've got to say it's rubbish because...
Exactly.
One
person's trash is another person's tremendous
tonic.
I don't remember anyone saying that Guy Ritchie's film was good. No one said that, sadly. Not even Guy Ritchie.
Well, some of the cinematic aspects of it are stunning. I mean... the fight sequences are, of course, extremely well done, and some of the kind of the dry, quick humor in the fight scenes and the discussions are very typical of Guy Ritchie's work. And so, if you're a fan of his, you do kind of get that. It's just some of the other stuff, not so much.
Renee, just flagging this up. Folk are actually interested in coming to see Richard Thorpe's Knights of the Round Table this coming Tuesday, the 7th of November, 2017. No ticket price, presumably. It's just a case of turn up and be there.
Open to everybody.
Cargill Lecture Theatre, 5:45, and the magic will proceed.
A free film. Who cares whether it's bad or not? It's a free film.
Exactly.
Goodness me.
Renee, who of course impressed everybody with her contribution to Past Prologue. That's what Finn Pollard coordinates as various other bits and pieces.
Well, that was Andy and I think, together as well.
Exactly.
So collaborating in various ways.
Exactly. Yeah. So have you had a reasonably interesting debut on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition? Has it been okay for you, Renee Ward?
Oh, yes. Just, I should have had more coffee.
Can we look forward to connecting you again with you again in the near future, and will you possibly indeed join Chris Shady and myself in the studio?
Absolutely. I think perhaps maybe when we do the Robin Hood films, maybe I can drag Andy in and we can both promote them.
Andy in tights, so, you know, people have paid for that sort of basis, you know.
He'll hate me for volunteering him.
It'll happen.
Give me plenty of that guitar.
I've been traveling on a boat in a plane, in a car, on a bike, with a bus, on a train. Traveling there, traveling here, everywhere, in every gear. But oh Lord, we pay the price with the spin of a wheel, with the roll of the dice. Ah yeah, you pay your fare, and if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Traveling through the dirt and the grime, from the past to the future, through the space and the time. Traveling deep beneath the waves, in watery grottos and mountainous caves. But ah, Lord, we got to fight with the thoughts in the head, with the dark and the light. No use to stop and stare, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Travelling on a wing and a prayer, by the skin of my teeth, by the breath of her hair. Travelling where the fall winds blow, with the sun on my face, in the ice and the snow. But ooh-wee, it's a game. Sometimes you're cool, sometimes you're lame. Oh yeah, it's somewhere, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. The spin of the wheel with the roll of the dice. Ah, yeah, you pay your fare. And if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. I keep traveling around the bend. There was no beginning, there is no end. It wasn't born and never dies. There are no edges, there is no size. Ah, yeah. Just don't win, it's so far out, the way out is in. Bow to God and call him sir, but if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there.
Good morning, Ian Lennox. Are you well?
Good morning, I am, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful. We're very well indeed. Now, Ian, in any of your novels, would you ever include the forthcoming phrase? Some scientists have extended the categorisation beyond microorganisms to macroorganisms, those that can be seen unaided with the human eye. This has led to the categorisation of a wide range of polyextremophiles, organisms capable of survival in a combination of hazardous conditions.
Right, I think we all know the answer to that, Alex.
And yet, as I will pass over to Shaley from a wonderful back issue of Star Trek Trek Futures, Chris Dowes, there's just one of the magical things, and lead a timeline for discovering extraterrestrial life. And I do believe, Chris, you might even have found some in Tyneside and Newcastle as well.
I lived for 8 months in Newcastle. And,
oh, right.
Because I used to work at the Metroworth Centre. Don't hit me for my pronunciation. Cycle there and back. I used to work in a clothing shop. It was just after I graduated. And I lived in Clayton Street Flats for 8 months. And within that time...
In the centre of the city?
Yeah, that's right. There were 3 murders in 8 months, and they nice. Never did catch me.
And not one of them was yours, anyway.
Thank goodness for that, no.
Look on the bright side, mate.
And I remember walking on a Sunday around, because this was before they really started renovating the place. It's a good 15, 20 years ago, even longer than that now. And just walking around Newcastle on a Sunday is lovely. Really, really beautiful buildings. Really, really great city.
Almost the last century then, Chris.
Absolutely right, yeah, absolutely.
Was the fog on the Tyne all thine?
No, it didn't go anywhere near me. No.
So it goes. So what's the weather like in Newcastle today? As we've obviously found out in Gibraltar, it's been fine, and indeed in Lincoln, it's a cold and cloudy start, turning brighter through the day.
It's coldish, but very clear. The sun's out. Both the cats are out.
Oh, there we are. Ollie and Obo.
Yep.
Do you have any pets, Chris?
No, I'm best not trusted with pets.
What, a tribble, perhaps?
No, that would probably die as well. We've had a run of goldfish commit suicide and rabbits die mysteriously, so we just don't do pets.
Perhaps it's too much Warhammer.
Could be, yeah, it could be terrifying.
I wonder if Australian goldfish go around the other way in the bowl.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
I have to pass on our best birthday wishes to, I think, a former colleague of yours, Ian Peter Mitchell, who used to be pretty regular on the programme.
Yeah.
And he responded to my birthday wishes by saying, I haven't heard from you in ages. You should have listened to the show with Peter. You know, that's the key. It's all part of the rich tapestry. Anyway, whilst you're still with us, Chris, we spent a lot of time talking about Star Trek and the commitment with that, and obviously Star Trek Discovery and so on and so forth. Warhammer is the other thing, which Ed Fortune from Starburst magazine was quite excited about last night, I think, when I mentioned that we had a Warhammer correspondent on.
That's very kind.
Yeah. So would you like to share, and indeed explain possibly for Ian, who may not, in his research for his latest novel about a bare knuckle fighter, would you like to explain a bit about Warhammer and what it is?
Yeah, Warhammer is it's a universe, fantasy universe. It's split into two. If you see Games Workshop, the role playing board games, that their shops, their the whole thing, all of the all of the battles, etc., are set in the Warhammer universe, which is basically split into what used to be kind of split into two, kind of like medieval Conan type, and then there's the sort of super futuristic type, and attached.
Is it two kingdoms?
It's two separate universes, which.
One in the past. Game of Thrones is small, but isn't it?
Oh, well, it's kind of a sort of a, one of them is a kind of a Game of Thrones-y sort of Conan the Barbarian type setup, and the other one is like a super sort of like it's called Warhammer 40K, which is 40,000 years in the future.
Why do you think these things are so popular? Have you thought?
I think there's a number of things to it. I mean, the whole Dungeons. The reason that Warhammer started, Games Workshop started, was because the guys who started Games Workshop wanted to get the license for Dungeons and Dragons in the 70s. They were unable to do that to bring it into the country, so they just thought, well, we'll make up our own gaming system. And it's kind of gone from there. And attached to the gaming side is a publishing arm called the Black Library Press. And that's who I work for, because the logic is that if you order a certain figurine or a machine or a tank or a weapon or something as a model to play on the actual board game, you'll get a thing with your order online saying, thank you very much for ordering so-and-so. Have you considered reading about this character or whatever it is? And then when you order a book or an audio drama, which I'm also working on at the moment, they'll say, thank you very much for ordering this book or audio drama. Have you considered buying this figure which features da-da-da? So it's kind of very, very... horizontally integrated, I believe.
Transmedia storytelling.
Goodness me.
Is the phrase I would use to describe that.
Transmedia storytelling. Blimey, I might write that down.
I assessed a PhD candidate on transmedia.
I knew you'd know something like that.
Yeah, you see. He just does the top of you every time, doesn't he?
Ask him to name the Mexican halfback line in 1954 and he hasn't a clue, but don't worry.
Ah, exactly, exactly.
Well, they're behind the wall now these days, so we don't talk about that. Shaley, Warhammer, is it something which has ever floated your boat in terms of interactive, immersive games and other factors?
It's definitely interesting, but I would have to say I prefer Dungeons & Dragons.
Fair enough.
Personally.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. But a lot of my friends are like into it. Isn't there... There's a Warhammer store in Lincoln, isn't there?
Yes, there is, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Games Workshop.
One in Tyneside.
Oh, I think there's a couple, actually, yeah. Well, yeah, they're all over the place.
They need to cope with the Burnley reception.
How would they get to Tyneside? Well, I mean, how does the story take it up to Lincoln and Tyneside? I don't understand that. It just sets a new scene, a new line of story or something like that?
What happens is they develop new scenarios and new universes.
Quoting from Callum Shepard's review of Total War : Warhammer 2, this really was a rare perfect match. On the one side, you have the minds behind Total War, and on the other, a fantasy world of rat men, elves, and humanoid dinosaurs.
So are we talking about Lincoln High Street, or are we talking about
Games Workshop?
Sounds like Newcastle at the
Summer Street. I've been in the big market. I know what it's all about. Now. There we go. I've been down the big market.
But it's worse than that on the Saturday, I can tell you.
Oh, dear me. Yeah. Last train back from South Shields. Oh, yeah, goodness, yeah. Well done that.
I used to have a friend who worked in London on the City Pages, actually. And the lads used to go out and get drunk every Friday night. And invariably, fell asleep on the train and woke up in Dover. And it got so frequent that the staff didn't bother to kick him off. Just let him sleep. When the train came on his return journey, he just got off.
Brilliant.
You see, Shaley, this is a subculture, which obviously with your Scottish and South African ancestry, you've probably managed to avoid. Yeah, but, you know, we figured now you've actually got a place in the 2018 Midweek Driver calendar. Yes, Chris, you might be in this calendar next year, actually. You need to take the photo shoots before too long.
Oh, I don't know about that. I've got a good face for radio, I mean.
People are already very impressed with the Facebook image last time around.
I look very grumpy on that Facebook image. I'm actually quite a happy person.
In fact, Larry Nemeczek has probably said, yes, that's going to increase our sales of Star Trek Monthly Magazine on a regular basis. So,
nice.
I think there's room for a book entitled An Anecdotal Thing of Things People Have Done When Drunk.
Oh, I would say several volumes.
Perhaps as a subtitle. I prefer a snappier headline, to be honest. You know.
Well, yes, maybe, but I could just my father's anecdote would figure large in mine. One of his friends, as a student, got absolutely rolling drunk during the 1926 general strike, and couldn't get home to Wallsend where he lived. So there's a tram, and he nicked the tram and drove home. But unfortunately, he was so drunk, he parked the bloody thing outside his house, so he was caught.
Perfect.
Was it the same time as Ellen Wilkinson, of course, local Labour MP for Middlesbrough, was complaining that the BBC were just biased for the government against the strike? We remember it so well. 90 years ago, yesterday. So, you know, it's very tempting to step through and lose oneself in another world.
Well, isn't it? Isn't it?
Well, I don't know. My grandparents, my father's father and mother, owned the Sun Hotel in Warkworth. It was a big hotel in Northumberland. And during the miners' strike, and my grandmother opened the soup kitchen for the miners' children because they were, you know, very hungry. And they used to walk 5 miles across the field to get some soup and then walk 5 miles back. And at one stage, they set up roadblocks in Northumberland, the miners. But my father's allowed to drive wherever he wanted because of the work of his mother.
It's the soup scenario. But
in another world, isn't it?
Whilst we continue with our quotes, these things cannot
be real. Sorry, I'm interjecting here.
Oh, no, not at all.
That's quite all right. Ian will be checking out the Guy Ritchie movie, I'm sure, before too long, of King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Or, as somebody once said, these things cannot be real and hallucinations cannot harm us.
Does Warhammer go back in time, then? Do they fight with swords and things? Or does
it one side of it is the kind of the
medieval.
It's like fantasy settings, so like Conan the Barbarian, all
that Robert
stuff, like
E. Howard.
Robert E. Howard stuff, yeah.
Yes. Cal the Conqueror.
Exactly. It's that kind of scenario. They kind of reinvented it. It's called Age of Sigmar now, and they're doing other things as well. But they're always...
Here came Conan, a thief, a reaver.
I tell you what, he wore his crown upon a troubled brow. Oh,
exactly.
How about
exactly.
that? Now, there's a film we need to put on, Conan the Barbarian.
With Schwarzenegger.
Oh.
It led to him becoming governor of California.
Of course it did, directly.
Marvellous.
Well, especially with
yes,
Oscar.
He didn't change that behaviour either.
No, bless him.
Yeah, but at least he hasn't gone down the Dustin Hoffman route. We won't go there.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
No, please.
Hoffman, no, Spacey, no, who's next? No. It's dreadful.
He's become an opponent of Trump, hasn't he? I think he's a critic of Trump.
I wonder, it's political then, it's politically motivated.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Shaley,
would anyway, you... Go on, sorry.
Sometimes I really wonder whether the schedule's... It's just as well we got the Amazon Christmas contest in last night, otherwise how we'd squeeze in another Richard Fitzwilliam.
Really.
Louis Savvy is joining us in the second part of the programme to talk about the November weekend of science fiction joy that's taking place with actually Warhammer represented in London this very weekend, Chris.
Is that right?
Great stuff there. He's also the founder of Sci-Fi London. Great. So we'll be speaking again to Josh Newis-Smith, a line I wanted to actually just raise with yourself, Ian, although I suspect I might know the answer to this. How much do you spend per month on your outfits and clothes?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Because modern men spend more than women, but it's all online apparently. Barclay Card has revealed that men are spending...
Modern men spend more than women? I don't believe that.
Modern men
That's
are spending...
Ain't not a woman I know.
Ian, step away from that political incorrectness.
They could spend more on a bus stop now than in Harrods.
I'm warning you, Ian. Modern men apparently spend £114 each month on clothes and shoes, which equates to over £300 more each year than women.
That's ridiculous. That's some expensive
stuff. I don't believe it. No.
Well,
I don't believe it.
We have TV
presenter...
Unless
the blokes are buying football strips.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Which makes us look so good, because you often see managers dressed in the football strip, don't you? And all this sort of serious line from that. Anyway, TV presenter and fashion and celebrity director in Style Magazine, Josh Newis-Smith, will be joining us to talk about that little survey. Well, tragically, Chris, you'll have left as
I'm
a stylish individual. You'll have moved on to do other matters, you know, elsewhere in the University of Lincoln, the home of Siren Radio.
Absolutely. Well, it's been absolutely lovely. Thank you very much for having me, and I do hope I can come back again.
Well, I think Ian, has he passed the test? I mean, two consecutive weeks, should he go for the third one?
Yeah, well, yes.
Yes, exactly.
He doesn't support Sunderland, does he?
No. I'm from Grimsby, and I don't support anybody, quite frankly. Not to.
Support fishing.
It's a way forward. Shaley, would you like to put those two interrogatives to War Ian, as we like to refer to him? War Ian.
War Ian.
Yeah.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, War?
I have, yes. I've been disrupted, but I've enjoyed it.
Oh, excellent. Do it again.
Technically, of course, Shirley, it's not so much war as in Warhammer, Ian. Although it could be Warhammer. Hide that hammer over here, as Ian.
here we go. Show us how it's done, mate.
Go authentic. That's the key thing.
And can we rely on you for next Thursday?
I hope so, yes.
Excellent.
News after Harry Styles, and then, oh Lord above, we'll be finding out what veterans are seen as being perceived as in the United Kingdom. And you can be a veteran at any age, apparently. Oh, it's astounding. Used to feel that I can touch what I see. We're not who we used to be. We're not who we used to be. We're just two ghosts standing in the place of you.